All right, we are in the Jenny K. Putman meeting room. This is the Citizens Advisory Committee for Jury Selection. Aaron Ammons, myself, I'm here, present, calling the meeting to order at 5:34, Friday, March 12th, 2010. I guess we can do a roll call and then we can discuss the quorum information afterwards, right? So, Aaron Ammons.
Joan Miller.
Ken Turner.
Bill Brown.
Tom DeFantis.
Roger Holland.
So, Roger, how many people do we have on the committee?
I believe we have 14 and we currently lack a quorum. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That is correct. 14.
And quorum needs to be?
8.
8.
Yep.
So, if when Patricia Avery and Barbara Kessel get here, then we would actually have a quorum.
Right.
Okay.
So I think the only difference, and I'm not an expert on Robert's Rules of Order, is that we can discuss information. We just can't take any action or any votes on anything. So you can't, I don't think you can approve the agenda or the minutes. You can do announcements and, you know, any of the areas of discussion. We just can't.
You said we cannot approve the agenda?
I don't think we can take any votes.
Okay.
I mean, Judge DeFantis would know better than I would, but that's my understanding.
Assuming they get here, we can approve the agenda and all of that when the other two get here. But I think Roger's right. We can have discussions. We can go down the agenda
to the areas that don't require voting.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Just informational stuff
right.
That we have that way we can don't have to wait.
Okay. So the two things that we have. So does anyone have any announcements or communications at this point?
The only communication I have, and I mentioned this earlier, was I have a phone call from a gentleman by the name of John Taylor, who is a clergyman. He's 83 years old. He contacted me a few weeks ago and indicated that he had an idea for for our jury committee, in that he was a retired individual and did not need the $10 per day or the mileage, and wanted to know if there was some way for the county to establish a fund that he could donate this money to, or anybody who is similarly situated, so that we could pool the money together and then help individuals who found it to be a financial hardship to serve on juries. I thanked him for his interest and indicated that I would pass this information or this issue along to the committee for consideration. My own personal opinion on it is that it could be difficult to administer, determining who would qualify for such a need, and also I don't know whether there would be enough funds gathered that through that mechanism to really make it worthwhile, but it was certainly a welcome comment from a member of the community, and I wanted to pass it along to the committee.
Even if you couldn't give it to a individual, can it be donated back to county funds?
Oh, sure. You just need to sign it over to the treasurer, and they would take it back. They don't have to take it from there. But I think the gentleman was concerned about the comments he had seen in the press, maybe from when we had our meeting with the League of Women Voters, about the hardships that some people have with the financial struggles for being on jury service.
So could we create a pool, money donated, that people, let's say in a year's time, we just set that money aside and saw what it accumulated to be. If people really get bought into that idea, and the people who came in said, "Hey, we want to set this to donate
think
back."
I think we could set up a an account out of the general corporate.
Yeah, it would definitely take county board action, I would think, and it might be a question better answered by Pius and certainly by Deb Busey, and maybe even Dan Welch, the treasurer, as to exactly what the mechanism would be. I think it's a great idea, even just to see how much it would be, and if so, donating it back to General Corp to even offset the cost of the jury system. Even if we can't give it to individuals, lower the costs of the jury system overall, the meals that we provide and the other costs associated with the jury system.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But that might be a question better left to them.
I mean, if you gave them the option and they came in to checking off something saying that they want to donate it, it could encourage that. And if a third of the people started doing it, maybe over a year's time you'd have $50,000 sitting there. The next year you could raise it to $30 a day, or what is it now, $20 a day?
$10 a day.
What does it run, about $2,500 a week for jurors?
Yeah, I believe it was somewhere between $2,000 and $2,500 for the week when we have jurors.
I mean, just if it, after a year's time, you could look at the pool and figure out, you know, if you could
sure.
have enough money to increase it by $5.
Well, if 10% of the money was donated, that's $200, $250 a week.
Right.
It could be more than that.
Mm. Now, whether people would be willing to do that or not, and I know that a lot of bigger organizations like the county, like the university, like Carl, exchange a person's jury pay for their regular paycheck. So they pay them for the time that they're on jury duty as if they were at work in exchange for receiving back that $10 per day check. So you turn
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Some do, but U of I doesn't.
U of I doesn't do that anymore?
They don't want it back. I mean, they still pay you, but they don't want your
Oh, I see. Right. Well, when the county wants you to sign your check back to the county. I know that for a fact.
Well, that makes sense.
And I think Carl did, too. I've worked there many, many years.
But again, we're talking about a relatively small amount of money, and I think if the business is large enough that you can pay your employee to be on jury duty, you probably don't need that $38 check.
Right.
Right.
So that would be their donation.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, it
sort of segues us, you know, we won't stray from this. I'm just saying that seeing how businesses play a part in this when we start talking about how to ask them what incentives can we give them and all that kind of different stuff for smaller businesses to pay for their employees to participate in jury service, but certainly a meeting with some of the larger employers asking that that their policy, that they adopt a policy that allows the money for them not to require that money to be returned to them, and knowing that it's going to go into a pool that could increase this,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think it's something that we'd have to orchestrate, but it just sort of took my thoughts there.
You can also maybe go to the Chamber of Commerce or something
like
that.
Right, see, that's
or,
what I mean.
You know, any local business groups, you know, so that you get multiple, you know, access to multiple business leaders at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think over a year ago, Deb Busey, the representative from the Chamber, I think your wife, maybe Jenny, myself, and Tom Costello, had lunch to discuss the chamber helping us to encourage businesses to pay their employees when they're on jury
mm-hmm.
duty,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to one, not paying them, and two, grumbling about you're not being here.
Right.
And we hear a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a lot of that with the employers, and they were very, very receptive to that. And we, so I think that's an avenue that you can explore.
Okay. Right. But now I think I took us a little bit away from what we wanted to do about the per diems, how much it would generate, what is the idea. I remember my experience being there and talking to some of the people there. There were, people who were business folks, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to do business and trying to conduct right. stuff and all kind of different stuff. So these are not, quote unquote, poor people. Sitting
right.
here, because by and large, we're saying that poor people are not coming because mm-hmm. they can't afford to come. So to anticipate 10%, you know what I mean, I think is reasonable. You know what I mean, 10-15% of people willing to say, hey, you know, sure, I'll give this back, if they have a clear understanding of what it's going to and what it would possibly produce.
And the gentleman's comments were specifically that he was a retired person and that he noticed that there were a lot of retired people who served on jury duty
mm-hmm.
and maybe those folks wouldn't necessarily need their money since that they weren't working, that maybe that was money that they could donate back. So
mm-hmm.
I thought it was a good idea. I don't know what the next action would be other than to maybe talk to Deb Busey and to Pius and to maybe to Dan Wells, to the treasurer, about how to maybe go about this and what the mechanism would be. And the other thing we could do is we could either do like a, I don't know what you want to call it, but maybe just a roster of individuals who, if they, when they come in for jury service, if they want to sign their name indicating that they wish that their money be donated, we could then do that. And I'm sure that we could draft a letter thanking them
mm-hmm.
for for their willingness to do that. So mm-hmm.
whenever Roger says we, that means he.
it's a joke. It's a running joke that we have between the two of us.
So at this particular time, individuals who want to voluntarily donate their money back, is that kept track of in any way, or is just saying, like, if I was there and I just say, well, I don't cash the check, or is there any mechanism now in place? Nothing. So if I gave my check back, or anyone here gave their money or didn't cash it?
Every now and then we will get a check back in the mail, but like maybe once or twice a year.
And it just goes back into the general.
Yeah, it goes in the general corporate fund.
Right.
And again, if we have, what, how many jury weeks of jury do we have now? 35?
Yeah. I mean, we used to have 50, and we cut it by 20%, so.
I mean, you could conservatively maybe generate $5,000 to $10,000 a year, and then we have an affidavit that an individual fills out when they come into court if they're charged with a crime for court-appointed counsel. And we have, you know, the guidelines, and you could establish those as your guidelines. Mm-hmm. And it may not be that you're going to be able to give them more than $25 a day, but it's better than 10.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And that's also something that the jury commissioners could deal with when people came in to say, I don't have the funds, I can't do it because of economic reasons. The jury commissioners could say, okay, we have this pool of money, we could make it this whatever number, would that help you? And, you know, then we can track it that way. So there's definitely ways we can do it. I think the first step is to figure out from the county side what would need to be done, and then the rest of it's just a matter of paperwork and shuffling papers.
Yeah, the jury commission would be the screening group. Because as we heard them say, they do excuse people for economic hardship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, definitely.
Right.
Well, I think we can talk to Pius about if the county board would have to vote. Oh, we didn't unlock it. I didn't unlock it. I'm buying into the wee joke.
Yeah.
yeah. So that's pretty encouraging because with all of the work that we do, I would really want us to be able to at least address this to some degree. Because I think if we say, listen, you're only getting $10 a day now, but we found a way to increase that to $25 or whatever, then here's an attempt from the side of government and the administration. Is there a sacrifice that you can make? Can you look at your own situation and say, okay, I'll make this sacrifice for a week. I mean, how often is this going to happen that you get selected for jury duty and to do this service?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a 2-week thing, it's a 1-week thing. So how can we can say, look, we've put together this education, we've made these changes so it's not so intrusive, we've done outreach, and we've increased the funding, even if it's just a little bit. Can we ask something of you, the citizen, now? Is there something that you can do to sacrifice for this week to make this happen so that you can serve?
One other thing, when we had that luncheon meeting, the MTD indicated almost, well, Costello didn't exactly say they would do it, but what we thought about was, what about providing bus passes to people who are on jury duty? Why do they have to pay to ride the public transportation? And we'd rather have them come by public transportation anyway.
Right.
And that's another area that we never got back to.
Mm-hmm.
But he indicated that was something that they might be open to.
Well, don't they get mileage?
They do get mileage, yes. But that means you have to drive their car. But if they don't drive their car, we don't reimburse them for public transportation.
But you do reimburse. I mean, you don't know whether they're driving
their car. Right. We would have to inquire about whether they were actually driving or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does a whole bunch of things. It's a much more green issue. The other thing is that if we could eventually lower the number of spaces that we have to take up, there may be some benefit there. So, you know, that's all a good thing. But yeah, I think the first spot would maybe be to talk to Pius and to Deb about the mechanism for setting it up, and then the paperwork is easy enough to do.
Well, Ms. Avery, we are not in a quorum yet, so we are not voting on any issues. We're just doing discussion. We need when Barbara Kessel gets here, I think we'll be able to.
Oh, I thought she said she sent an email saying she couldn't make
it. No, she said she'd be a little late, but she's on her way. Okay. So we're just discussing right now. We had an announcement that a gentleman, an 83-year-old gentleman from Muhammad.
Well, he was from, I think he might have been from Muhammad or St. Joe. He's a minister. His name is John Taylor. He's 83. He's retired, and he thought he had I don't know whether he had heard about our the appearance at the League of Women Voters or what have you, but his idea was to perhaps set up a pool where people who were retired or otherwise didn't need the money for the per diem could put it back, and so the people could then, who had an economic hardship, could draw upon that in some way, or we could draw upon it to help those people who had an economic hardship, which I thought was a great idea, and told him that I would forward it to the committee for consideration at the next meeting, which is now. So that's why I brought it up under announcements.
Mm-hmm. Announcements. That's a good name for a jury bank.
I like that, a jury bank.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have a jury pool.
Right. Yeah, you can't call it a jury pool, right?
No.
I already have one of those.
So we'll just continue like announcements and communication. Did anyone, Mrs. Miller?
Yes, Steve Beckett will be speaking at the League of Women Voters annual meeting, and his topic is jury diversity. I don't know if it's the same thing you heard at your conference. I haven't talked to him yet. It's May 13th, it's a Thursday, 7 p.m. at the Hawthorne Suites.
May 13th.
And it's
7:30 p.m.
7
p.m. And okay.
There is a cost,
$15,
if you come for dessert, but you can come at
7:30
to hear Steve, and then there wouldn't be a charge.
Okay. I don't know that I want to pay
$15
to listen to Steve.
In fact, Steve should be paying us.
Let the record show, I did not pay.
I did.
I seconded the motion if it makes me feel any better. That's right. We don't have four.
That's right. It's like this never happened.
Exactly.
The audio will never be posted.
Let's see. So, okay. So, any other communications and announcements?
We had talked about at one meeting that you weren't here for, about possibly looking at, when you were talking about maybe getting larger stipends for, you know, our potential jurors who are having hardships. I like that idea of a jury bank, but also didn't we say that we might be able to look to see if maybe we need to talk to the state's attorney about that, but the drug forfeiture monies? Mm.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I did too.
Can possibly be used for some of that. It may be some of that can go into our jury bank.
They watch that, not the state's attorney, but that money is, they're pretty rigid as to what we can use it for.
The training, couldn't jury?
Well, I just, what better use for the money than to provide it to the jurors who would hear these cases?
Mm-hmm.
May I ask, rigid in what regard?
Well, you can't. you can buy equipment that would be related to drug prosecutions. You can do training. When I was in office, I used it to. We did things in the various neighborhoods, picnics for the kids, things like that. Of course, I got in trouble for that, and we had to stop doing it. But you can use it for whatever would be considered drug prosecution or investigations, things like that.
Does that all go to the county, or does some of it go to local police departments?
Some of it goes. There's a percentage. The state's attorney gets a percentage. The arresting agency gets a percentage. The state gets a percentage. They have a breakdown as to where the forfeiture money goes.
Well, that was my question. Could we ask for a percentage of the money as opposed to just, I mean, you know, if it's 10%.
Why not all of it?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. If you're saying that these other agencies have built into their budgets particular percentages, or they anticipate a certain amount over the years. They're not going to want to just give it all up, right?
It's established by statute, I think, how much each percentage, you know, where that money goes. I don't think it's something that they just agree to. I think
that's
it's
a legislative committee thing.
I'm going to raise, I know some people that work in the legislature, and I'm going to raise that issue because Roger's right. We can just, if they pass legislation that gives us a cut, not us, but I mean juries, a cut, then there's no question.
Right.
That seems like it would be a less biased use than, say, enforcement. Or
You're right.
You know, like as it is now, it provides incentive for police to get a high-value bus traffic.
Well, I had a fee waiver on my desk today from an individual whose car was seized because she let her friend use it, and her friend was arrested selling drugs. Well, she's the owner of the vehicle, and now they want to forfeit the vehicle. And so I signed the fee waiver because she's contesting it. Now she's able to contest it without having to pay a 10%. I think it's 10% of the value of whatever it is that's trying to be forfeited. But yeah, they do that. They take they take vehicles and sell them. Okay. They take all sorts of things.
Yeah. So it generates quite. And is it just it's for a particular area, or is this the state of Illinois?
Well, it's the county. The actual county can do it. Yeah,
the counties.
And they can do it in a quicker proceedings if it's not real property and if it has a value of less than $25,000. Drug forfeiture legislation.
Yeah.
All right.
And
I'll be a big supporter of that.
And that would make us push the one asking the county like way down on the end for. Because I've been asking about.
They don't have money. That's why I'm
sales.
Saying we need
I know. I mean, I was just wondering about that.
That's why these donations.
The quarter cent, right.
The sales tax thing. I've been asking about that for a long time. I haven't gotten a clear answer on that one at all. You know, what are these things used for? And to me, from a social justice, I know some of it goes to social justice agencies, right? The quarter cent sales tax, right? I mean, I think this fits within that realm. You know what I mean? But, you know.
Yeah,
it would be down on the list.
I thought it was juvenile. It was related to
5% of
set aside for juvenile.
But those are programs. So
it is social programs. But I think the enacting thing was
is specific to
juvenile issues.
Because when the idea behind that was is that we're going to build a juvenile detention center. Let's put some money into prevention to try to keep them out. We don't want to build it and fill it. And
that was the notion. That was 5% of the quarter percent was for juvenile prevention.
Right.
Quarter percent is still open to any kind of justice use. I think so.
Well,
but a lot of it's already been tied up into bond issues and other things it's all the rest of it I think is more earmarked for specific things. I mean, I think part of the quarter cent sales tax was to retire the bonds for the building of the courthouse and the remodeling of the old courthouse.
I'd be willing to bet if we got legislation introduced to give us a cut of the forfeited monies, the state's attorneys would be in there objecting.
I think so.
But
maybe not.
The legislators don't like them anyway, so who cares?
Right. You know, when I was thinking about the quarter cent sales tax. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay.
You're the president. You go ahead.
All right. Thank you. The thought that I just had was that, okay, fine, we may not be able to say the quarter cent sales tax money goes for jurors, but part of what we're trying to do with outreach and education is to reach the young people. So what about some of that money or asking that, saying, hey, the programs that are getting some of the quarter cent sales tax, that the juvenile programs and the youth learn about the system in a different way, learn about their responsibilities and how they can serve in a different way. That so if you receive some of this, part of the programming that you do has to somehow tie into that. I don't know, maybe that's really reaching, but I just, when you said that it's for juvenile programs, you know, how often do we see, you know, your good friend Steve has a mock trial over there, but I don't see a lot of the programs dealing with this type of stuff.
And you're absolutely right, because the kids that we deal with are in the system because they've been arrested or they've gotten in trouble. Mm-hmm. This is a different, you're absolutely right, a different way for them to look at being involved in the system besides getting arrested.
Right, right. And the experience is different. And there's education there, right? You know what I mean? You see your role, as Judge DeFantis was saying before we started, about the two trials mm-hmm. that he did recently. We had three African-Americans in the pool, out of 12, in the seats. And then in another one, there were two African-Americans in the seats. And to me, I was just thinking about this earlier when I was thinking about the idea of a PSA. And just asking the question, if you were charged with a crime and had to go to trial, mm-hmm. what would you want your jury to look like?
Right.
You know, what would you want it to look like? So when you start talking to them about these programs and stuff like that, even when you are in a situation where you feel like you're right and you know that you haven't done anything, when you say you can face up to X amount of years in prison, or you can plea bargain for this. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to go to trial, especially thinking, I'm going to go to trial, and this jury is not going to be the type of jury that's favorable, who's going to understand my plight. So that just sort of adds to the willingness to accept whatever this plea bargain is, even for people who are innocent. Now, people who are guilty, they got their own little thing that they're trying to work out. But innocent people take plea bargains for fear of having to go to trial and stuff like that. And so teaching them early on the power and the influence of being on a trial, what that actually, it empowers them, I believe. Not in a negative way to say, hey, your best friend is on trial and you hang the jury because you don't want to get into trouble. But to also teach, our system says that if you are on a jury and you don't believe that the evidence has been sufficiently presented, you do have the power to hang the entire jury.
Oh yeah,
that's empowering, I believe, to young people to know that their one vote can really make a difference.
And hopefully it teaches some responsibility too.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Because
exactly.
If you're a citizen, you said it at the meeting at the League of Women Voters. There's a responsibility there.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes.
The one thing I was thinking about is I remember when Joe, was the Schreeder over at JDC? I ran into Bob
Schreeder.
He used to bring kids into the JDC and kind of give them an education from kind of a scared straight kind of tactic. I don't know how much that worked, but I was thinking, how often do we bring our kids into the courtrooms?
We have tours of school kids quite frequently.
Do you?
I wouldn't say it's every week.
I mean inner city rooms.
I don't know exactly which schools there are, but it's a variety from whoever.
Diverse.
Yeah, I mean, whoever wants it. I mean, it's not restricted in any way. In fact, I got a call that a teacher in Urbana wants to have their business law class come, and this is the second or third year in a row that we've done that.
That's true.
We've had Parkland College students. We've also had, everybody. We had the entire fourth grade from,
wow.
I want to say it was Leal.
This Grayball's class.
Leal School or something. But, I mean, we've had... You know, we have a variety of different, groups that come in, and we're always willing to give them a tour, and they get, excited about sitting in a courtroom and seeing what it's like, and we always talk about the role of a jury and that sort of thing. So they I know, speaking of Mr. Beckett, he always, his wife, arranges for some people from, Holy Cross, a class from Holy Cross, mm-hmm. to come over, and they actually do a mock trial.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I end up helping the prosecutor in that case, and we have never won a case. Steve Beckett, I think, stacks the jury. But anyway, we do have tours of kids anytime they want to come in, and I know that Barb Wysocki sent me an email earlier this week where they're planning on doing some activities related to the Law Day, which is May 1st. They're going to have a series of activities in front of and throughout the courthouse, including foot races in front of the courthouse to commemorate Lincoln's foot races in front of the courthouse and tours and whatnot on April 30th. So
we do April 30th?
April 30th, yeah. I have more of the details. She sent me an email, but that's the day they're going to do it.
So I wonder how broad, I mean, how much, what kind of outreach was done? Because I don't, maybe somewhere in the back of my mind I remember hearing, maybe, did you say that at the last minute? Somebody said something about Law Day.
I think Jenny did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I haven't seen anything since then.
I just got an email from Barb this week. She's acting as the liaison, I think, between the Bar Association and the different organizations downtown to try to arrange it all.
She sent it today.
Yeah. Thing reminding us about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a variety of different ages involved too. It's everywhere from daycare, kids in daycare center age, all the way up through different ages in school are coming over to the courthouse. You're going to see the Lincoln exhibit, and also
that would have been a great project for the peer ambassadors to be involved in, because mm-hmm. they could have really gotten that through to them.
So that's next Friday, April 30th.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
right.
And I can send out, I'll write myself a note to send an email to all of you to let you know
Okay. Exactly
when, because it's kind of spread out throughout the day to three or four different things. So I'll forward that email to all of you.
Okay, good. So now that we have a quorum present, now is Patricia Avery and Barbara Kessel. So we have eight members that constitute a quorum for us to be able to move through the agenda to vote on items as well. So
I move to approve the agenda.
I second.
Moved by Judge DeFantis and second by Roger Holland. Any discussion? So those who are all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Ayes have it. Right. So the roll call is done. Approval of the agenda. It looks like the minutes are old minutes, y'all.
Yes.
I don't know.
I think they must pass.
She put them out because of the yellow part.
So we have some from January. Does everybody have a copy of January 22nd?
Right. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, okay. March 12th. Do we have a copy of March 12th?
I don't have a copy of March 12th.
No. So I don't know what. Pius.
So we're just going to approve the minutes of January.
Well, I think
we already approved those. Yeah. These are old minutes.
So we'll have to wait to approve those March 12th ones until later.
Yes. So do we need to have a motion?
I move to defer the minutes of March 12th to our next meeting.
Second.
Moved by Patricia Avery, second by Roger Holland. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. So we will move on. And we do you have any announcements or communications, Ms. Avery? Or Barbara Kessel? No. Okay. So we've pretty much covered the announcements and communications. Public participation, seeing none. Mr. Holland,
yes.
Follow up on computer software, randomness selection process, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. The only thing I really have on that is an update with regard to our questionnaires. The questionnaires, we originally had a date that we were going to send them out on April 1st. That has been delayed. Kirk Bedwell, who is in charge of programming that stuff for us, did his part in putting together the actual questionnaire, how it looks, but the actual programming and tying that to the computer system, he was unable to do, so it had to be sent down to to Judicial Systems, which is the company, Gary Dower, who's mentioned in the minutes, down in Texas. But he is putting that together now. What's going to happen is in the middle of May, probably in the next 2 weeks, but no later than the middle of May, we'll have the new questionnaire being used, as well as the new jury wheel, so the new data that we get from the Secretary of State will also be implemented, as well as some software updates that came through Judicial Systems, as they do, at no cost to the county other than the regular cost that we pay for our annual upkeep for the software. And so that will all happen in the middle of May. We have got a new scanner because the old one died, and we also have a new badge reader because the old one died. Kind of, in fact, it was kind of looks like a gun, the badge reader, so we had to get it cleared through security so they knew that when our jury people were pointing them at people, it was not read to be like a firearm. But anyway, so all of our equipment will be new, the software will be new, the data will be new, so and the questionnaire will be new. So as soon as we start getting statistics from that, I will report that back to the group.
Just fine.
Did Jenny's email say that she got a questionnaire?
Yes, she did.
A new one.
Thanking us all for working on the old questionnaire, and I was thinking that.
Yeah, you know, Jenny's email this week said that she got a new questionnaire in the mail and she filled it out.
Summoning her to be on the jury.
Well, I mean, she may have said that she got a questionnaire, but it's not a new. But it's not a new one.
I thought she said she had a new one. Well,
we'll have to investigate because what she got. We don't know what she got. But as far as I know, those questionnaires haven't been sent out. So
I mean, actually, you could be sending out new ones. Not scanning them yet.
It's possible, but I know that we're not going to send out any new questionnaires until we get the information back from our folks in Texas. So once they tie that all together, then we'll have it all put together.
When you said new software, are you just speaking? What are you speaking to when you say new software?
It's not new software. It's as all of you have used software before, you know that you get annual updates or frequent updates when they have security issues or whatever. Judicial system software, which is the software we use for our jury system, is no different. So it just so happens that all of these things are going to coincide at the same time. So the update to the software that we get every year, the new jury data for the jury wheel is going to be uploaded so that we'll have the freshest addresses that we have in the system. And the new questionnaire will be out all at the same time, and then it's approximately the next 2 weeks, but certainly no later than the middle of May.
Will that change also after the census is read?
I don't think there's any automatic changes to that. Again, the data only comes to us through the jury wheel process, so that I don't think the Secretary of State's data has any impact on the census.
So when you say jury wheel, you're talking about the things that qualify a person to be a part of the pool. Is that correct?
It's the data that we get from the Secretary of State that has the driver's license information and the voter registration information.
So and the Illinois state ID.
And ID cards,
yes. So basically it's just every 6 months or every year we get a new wheel which gives us the newest addresses, and those have also been sent through the change of address database. So if someone has changed their address and they're moving from one place in Champaign County to another, that also information will also be in there as well.
Okay. And that's, can I just have a follow-up question? The state gets that information from our county clerk.
The voter registration information, yes. The driver's license information they get from their driver's license bureaus.
And their Illinois ID cards come from their
own right. As well. Okay.
Yep.
Patrick. Okay. So one of the questions that I had was in relationship to the numbers that we saw. We saw a population number a couple months back, and a number of individuals who were actually fit the criteria, whether it was driver's license, state ID, or registered voter. And the population, we were somewhat surprised. I don't have my other notes with me here. We were somewhat surprised of how close we were from the number of people we have who would possibly qualify, and the number of people who were actually in that pool. And I really wanted to know if William, in particular, if you had looked at that any further to see, I wanted more clarity on that. And I felt like it kind of came out towards the end of a meeting, and I wasn't able to really grasp the magnitude of it, but it was something important there.
It did seem like it was close, and I think that's about as much as we can say. The numbers I had was, Kirk said 136,000 is in the jury wheel, and my estimate for people who would qualify, including students and everything else, would be about 150,000, but that's give or take 10,000 because it's just hard to tell because it's 10 years after the census and it's hard to get accurate numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So 136,000 seems real reasonable considering that a lot of the students aren't going to be in there because they didn't register to vote here.
That's obviously something we could look at again once the new census data comes out, and now that we have the new wheel, we can do that comparison, that simple comparison again, and get the information to you, so that way we know, you know, with the newest information, how close we are, and hopefully we're even closer.
And the other number that is that allows a lot of error, and there's the foreign population, the non-citizen population that wouldn't qualify, that would count it in the census. They just wouldn't. And they may have driver's license, so there's some
right.
issues there. You can't get an exact number.
I really would like for us to do something like a... you know how when we first came, we watched the video, stuff like that. Being a very visual learner, it really helps me see stuff sometimes. And even as we meet, to take 15 or 20 minutes for somebody to present something, because I want to know, I don't want us to, it seems like we would spend a lot of time maybe spinning our wheels if we think that education is the big issue. Then we find out that we're not that far off from number of people who are actually in the pool, that is something else that we need to be addressing.
The population that we're targeting isn't returning the questionnaire, so they take themselves out of the system. They're in there, they get a questionnaire, and that's where the outreach.
Even helps us pinpoint.
Right.
We're going. Now, Patrick, you had brought something up with last time we talked about these numbers about people who are not getting the questionnaire, period, or something like that. I didn't know if you went, if you...
You talked about suspended driver's license. I think if your license is suspended, you're out of the system.
You are out of the system.
Mm-hmm. Unless you get state ID.
Yeah, unless you have a state ID.
So even that ties into what we were saying. Like you saying, there's some people who may not have no... They may just be off the grid, period.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I ran into, when we were doing, like, voting drives and stuff, I'd run into people and say, hey, I want to register you to vote. No, because then my name's going to be on that jury pool,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, you have a state ID? Yeah. You're in the pool anyway. So what I'm speaking to is that there's some people who are just misinformed about how this takes place. So while they may be attempting to either get their names removed from the jury pool for whatever reasons, or... Just not really thoroughly informed about the process. So I don't know how many numbers that would be, but our education would still be targeted to this same group of people who doesn't want to return the questionnaire.
That's the same group.
Right?
Well, and the other thing, too, is maybe if there was some way where we could give people an opportunity to come in and look at what it would be like to actually serve on a jury without doing it. In other words, to see, to demystify, if you want to use that term, or to lower the apprehension of people to come in and see what it's all about, because I think there may be some people out there who are so worried that they're going to be singled out or something, and maybe they're just intimidated by the whole process. So maybe we can do more open houses or something like that, mm-hmm. that would seem to help.
Patrick,
my estimate, my guess, with a certain age group, probably 18, and I don't want to say a cutoff period, but let's just say the 18 to maybe 25 or 18 to 30, if they don't have any driver's license and they're unemployed, then they probably are not going to have any state ID. You know, so you're going to have a lot of that age group that are probably not going to have, and especially, so they're not going to be in that pool because they're not going to have, even if they had driver's license, they may be suspended. Because I'm thinking that there's a big population, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm going to reflect it on when I was at that age,
right.
in that age group that I was in, and the individuals that were in my age bracket, mm-hmm. you know, how many of us didn't have driver's license or identification. And we only maybe got identification if we got employed enough to go cash a check. You know, so it wasn't on our priority list to have. You know, the only thing that would have been on there was driver's license. Since we no longer have valid driver's license, then we would not. So I don't know how many of those individuals. I imagine it's a lot, but you just don't know. And then that's just one. That's probably just one factor. That's just one factor. Mm-hmm. You know, the other factor is that, okay, they may not no longer be at that address. or they may not be filling them out. So all those, you know, I mean, all those factors are, is to me, is what's creating this problem.
Let's deal with that one, Judge DeFantis. We'll respond to that one, and then we'll come back to the other.
Well, it's a question about, when you're talking about young people being on juries, I really don't see that many young people on juries. I see some Parkland students, see some U of I students if they registered. The questionnaire that we have now, they give us their date of birth. Do we have the ability through our program to pull up and break it down by 18 to 25, 25 to 45,
right.
45 and above?
My guess is that we probably could. I'm sure that there's some way that
we
would want to.
Just from my observation, I think I don't see that many young people.
No, we don't. Even when we go into just court watch and all that kind of stuff, just being there, that's not a lot of young people there. And when we start talking about the education piece, certainly, when I was running the streets too, I didn't realize, I had never heard of a state ID. I had no idea that I could even have a state ID. I thought driver's license was it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did go through a spell of suspended or revoked license, that's when I learned about a state ID. So there's a tremendous, like you said, and so you're talking about people who may not be registered to vote. Young people, you know, who are not registered to vote, who don't have driver's license, who have no idea what a state ID is, right? So they are completely off the grid just from that standpoint, where they're suspended, their driver's license is suspended. So the education, though, is still very important for them because the state ID now puts them in the pool. So, hey, listen, if you don't have valid driver's license, just from a standpoint of your citizenship or you maybe needing an ID for some other reason, because even if you have a suspended driver's license, your ID still works,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, you still use it as identification to cash a check
mm-hmm.
or to do whatever. So you don't have a state ID. You're not a registered voter. I have an ID that's not, the date is not outdated, so I can still use it if I go to the currency exchange right. or whatever, you know. So we need to encourage them to get state IDs, you know.
Okay. Why don't we see if Kirk can give us a breakdown? However, we at least the 18 to 25 year olds. I just don't see that many.
Yeah, I've got it written down here. I'll ask Kirk.
So when did the state IDs become? You know, it's almost like mandatory to have some kind of ID. It hasn't always been. So when you said I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about it either, but you haven't always had to get a state ID. So
no.
When did they start?
I think it's been rather recent. Yeah. By recent, I mean probably in the last 15 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. It used to be only registered voters. Then they went to driver's licenses and then state IDs. So that's probably within the past 20 years.
Yeah,
that's true.
It
hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Now, you said 18 to 25, you'll see. But what about... what age group do you start seeing them, you know, minorities? Do you, is it 30 or up? Or
30 and up.
30 and up is mm-hmm. when you start seeing?
And I see retired, too. Okay. 60 and over.
So it's interesting that the machine is randomly picking that age group and you see mm-hmm. more...
No, you'd finish. I just wanted to let them know what the order was afterwards.
Well, I guess maybe it's because they're not in there in the first place.
They're not sending that questionnaire in. So they don't exist as far as the computer is
concerned. And also, some of the younger people are families. They have families. So they may be the ones who are going to the jury commission to ask for to be excused also.
Okay. You answered my question. I also want to ask how many are actually showing up to the commission and then asking to be excused.
Right.
There may be some showing up, and they're saying, "Hey, I can't."
And that would be good to have as a part of the data. Yeah.
And again, that gets us back to funding mm-hmm. for the jurors.
Mm-hmm. Right, the training and all that type of stuff.
Well, and if we can get a cut of that drug forfeiture money to increase the per diem.
That's
So that would after you come up, I'd like to hear something back from the. We can cover that under the political action team, some discussion with the legislators about something like that. I know it's a hot time for them, but maybe Will, you want to say something?
I was going to mention young families, child care issues probably get a lot of people excused, and there's definitely higher rate of young children, families, and minorities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that can move us into the next piece. If everybody's clear on the number 7, we just wanted to have some feedback on that. We're on number 8 now, Patrick. Sharing of the PSAs, discussions, and editing. Let's return back to that for a second. Let's just a couple of quick things, so that, and then let that be the last piece that we discuss. I had a thought about discussion of radio appearances, right? And for, it came up because we had invited Judge DeFinis for our radio show tomorrow, but he's probably going to be on May 22nd for High Ground with Carol and I. But WDWS, you know, some of the other places where we can have...
Penny for your thoughts.
Penny for your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
What's your availability during the morning?
Right now, it's difficult for me in the mornings. I got moved to a day shift for the next several months. But after July 11th is my last day on the day shift or something like that. Then, so sort of after that point, I would be available for morning pieces.
I know they would love to have Kevin. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So I mean, but you know, I would need somebody who's there that they trust to come on.
We can do it.
Okay.
You and me.
All right. And we means me and you for real.
We let the record reflect that we does not mean me. Okay. That's not me. I'm out of the we.
Both of us carrying the load. You're right.
I think that would be a good show.
And Interpret looks for guests. I mean, yeah. Sometimes they're pressed for it.
Okay.
I think that would be good.
So we could talk about that. I just want to throw that out there because I think just part of the education, you know, and it doesn't have to just be me or you. I mean, when we're out there, making sure that we're very clear about what we're sharing gets it out there to people and gets very clear thoughts out there. And that it raises a question because for some reason I've gotten confused about something. Everybody who's in the wheel receives a questionnaire.
No.
See what I mean? He said no.
I mean, we ask so many at a time, so we may not ever get to the 150,000. We only ever use 150,000. What we do is we say, okay, we need to send out questionnaires so we have enough for our juries. So we ask the computer give us the next 10, 50, 100, 500, whatever it is. And the computer goes out and randomly picks those people out of the wheel, prints out the questionnaires with their names on them. They get folded and with the return information by the people at the jury, our jury folks, and they get mailed out.
Okay. So of the, let's say we have, I see you there. If we have 150,000 people in Champaign County who are eligible in the wheel, this is done once a year. It's done on a yearly basis.
The update of the wheel is done on a yearly basis. The
update of the wheel. So, see, this is why I need visuals. I'm just trying to see how. Because I made a statement that everybody who is in the wheel gets a questionnaire.
No.
And, right. Right. So
anybody who's on the wheel is eligible to get
a questionnaire.
What percentage gets?
Well, that I would have to go back and look at exactly how many we send out because we don't do a set number. We don't want to waste people's time by having them fill out questionnaires if we have enough people who are listed as eligible. So it kind of varies from time to time, and our jury folks keep kind of a close track of how many of the people who have sent back we have ready to go. Mm-hmm. So we only send out when we need to replenish that supply. So we might send out for a while we were sending out 400 or 500 a week. And then when we got enough in the pool who said, okay, I can serve, and they meet all of the initial criteria, then we stop until we need more people, and then we ask the computer for 500 more, however many more. It kicks them out. We send them out, and then we process them as they come back.
Yes, one follow-up.
Right?
I'm sorry?
The ones that aren't chosen are the ones that say, I can't serve this time, go back in there.
If they come back and say, we can't serve, then it depends. They could be excused, which means... they're not going to be able to serve at all. They could be set over, meaning that the month of August isn't good for me, but I could do it in September. So then we set them over so that they can show up in September. We also get the information back from the jury commission, who has met with people who come in and say, I can't serve, or I need to be sent over, or what have you. And that information is put into the system as well.
So, I know, but we had, everybody got some follow-up stuff. So, Ms. Barbara Kessel.
Next. Patricia raised this a long time ago, the question of people serving over and over and over. Mm-hmm. How long is it after you have served that you get put back into the wheel?
You can't serve more than once in the same year, I believe, but the odds of you getting called back 2 years in a row is remote. I mean, you have to understand, of 136,000, you know, or however, whatever that number is, we're only sending out, you know, we're only summoning, you know, getting 100 a week, you know, who come in who actually show up for jury service. We probably send out 125 to 150 for that for each week. So if you multiply that out, that's 5,000, 6,000 out of the 136,000 that might be out there on the wheel. So when you look at it, it's a very slim sliver. But I've had people who lived in Urbana. I had friends who lived in Urbana for 40 years, and the only time that this person got a questionnaire was after he was diagnosed with cancer and had to be excused. And that's after he had been in his 70s or 80s and had lived here his whole life, been a registered voter his whole adult life, been a driver his whole life, and just never got picked. And, you know, it just happens that way. It's just random.
I think my question is, one Patricia raised a long time ago, which is, couldn't people be removed from the wheel after they have served for a longer period of time than just the same year? Because I have a cousin's child, who's about 24, and she said a couple months ago, you know, I was in jury duty last summer, and I served for a week, and I was in a whole bunch of different juries and everything. It was all very interesting. I didn't mind. But I got another, this spring, I got another request to serve in a jury, and I'm, you know, let somebody else do it. I'm tired.
Right.
Well, and I was like, how did that even happen?
Yeah.
She lives with her mother and is a graduate student, and so she's got an address that's been around for, many, many, many decades that belongs to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I figured that had something to do with it.
That's
but
quite
she's
possible.
The only person in my huge family that's ever gotten a jury summons.
Sure.
Once.
Sure.
And now she's got it twice. It seems like there's something going on that attracts additional jury service.
Might
have had it.
Same thing happened. She
it's
called.
Too weird.
It does, you know, random is random.
If we have 35 weeks of jury duty and let's say we have 90 people that actually show up, we're talking about 3,150 people for the course of a year that actually come in. We probably send out maybe 4,000 questionnaires to get that 3,100. So we're not talking about
a
lot.
That's a pretty good ratio.
We're doing much better with our questionnaires and the people returning them. But I've had jurors who've been called for jury duty 3, 4, 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had people, retired people, 70, 80 years old. This is their first time.
But my question is, she said, couldn't we, and I agree with her, couldn't we take people out once they have served for 2 years or 3 years, something reasonable so they don't get, you know,
well,
and then they
get
more
people
of other
have a chance
can't
to come in.
Yeah.
Well, here's the situation. The odds of that happening are not good. But if it were to happen and it were to be a hardship, obviously she could call and say, you know, I was just on jury last year, early, whatever it is. Can I be excused? And that would automatically pull in the next person in line. So it is more put back on them. I understand what you're saying, that it would be automatic.
Except the wheel is the Secretary of State. We can't.
Right.
We
have
we
no
can't,
control
over
it.
We can't,
oh,
we can't,
you can't do what I'm suggesting.
We can't take people out of the
okay.
out of that 136,000 names
right.
they give us.
Right.
Okay. But what, I don't know, maybe your question is going to be this, but I wanted to just see, you said you can't take people out of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Of people that are being put in there. Mm-hmm. But what determines the frequency of you taking it? I don't know. I can't visualize it. You say you take people, you say, okay, you got 150,000 people in here, and you got 4,000 people or 3,000 people that served in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to be, they can't serve for 3 years. Now you've got 147,000 people that you're going to.
But it's every year.
But you can't, so the, see, that's what I don't, I guess it's hard for me to wrap my head around that piece right there, because it just sort of starts over again. But how can you pinpoint there has to be some control, somebody's controlling how that happens, the randomness of that. Saying, okay, here's these, it's what, 9 of us here, right? And you guys get picked. Somehow we can control whether or not you guys get picked again on the next round. And then if you can prevent that within a calendar year, then you can prevent it happening for the next 2 or 3 years,
sure,
right?
Sure, you could. That's not the issue. The computer system is set up in a way, so it's a complicated logarithm to get the randomness part. But in reality, it's set up to do something pretty simple. Once a year, you get this pool of data. Imagine it like a big box of ping pong balls, okay? Mm-hmm. So when we need to have jurors, we do the wheel and we pull out ping pong balls, we match up the numbers, and that's who we get. So after that year is over, we go out, we throw all those ping pong balls away and get in new ping pong balls. Unless you've already been...
Oh, you throw them all away.
Unless you have already been determined to be eligible to serve. In other words, unless you've already been sent a questionnaire, you've said, okay, I'm going to serve, then you're in our bank of people that can serve. Okay? Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of crossover is what I'm trying to say. But for the most part, what we're trying to do is just get that most updated information that we can from the Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. And that's the only place we can get the information from. Mm-hmm. And so basically, again, it's a random selection from those ping pong balls. You pull them out, and they get sent the questionnaires.
But there is an overlap, like you said, of people who say, I can serve, they get put into a bank. I'm sorry, Patrick, I shouldn't have let you answer your question.
So, Judge, when you say you saw people 3 or 4 times, are you talking about within 1 year?
Oh, no. Over the course of living here in the community.
Okay. Oh, okay. Over the course of a period of time.
Right. It may be over the course of 15, 20, 25 years. So I've seen people that have had jury service 35, 40 years ago. Of course, obviously, they're now older, but yeah.
So I guess the idea then would to be, say, okay, just let's throw a number out there. We say, okay, we got additional 20,000 or 10,000, depending on the population, 10,000 to 15,000 more minorities that either didn't have identification or had everything, was just wasn't getting called into that big pool.
Mm-hmm. Right, into the wheel.
And that would generate, when you got ready to pull, mm-hmm, 100 to 200 juries a week to send out questionnaires. And that should increase the minorities to come sit on the juries.
If they return their questionnaire,
correct. So I'm hearing questionnaires, so we got questionnaires, and we got a need to increase. So you need to get more minorities into the jury wheel.
There's like two phases that I think we need to go at. First, in order to get into the wheel itself,
yes,
you need to have one of those things we talked about, a driver's license, registered voter, ID card. So that's step one. Okay, if you meet that step one, then the second step of the process is, when we send you a questionnaire, you've got to send it back. That's the only way you're going to get in the system. And based on my perspective, that seems to me to be where the major breakdown is that when we send out these questionnaires, for whatever reason, which I don't know, people aren't sending them back. And so, you know, that to me is right at the crux of where we have the problem. As far as getting people into the system.
Now, when you say people not sending them back, if you got a small number of minorities, that are already not in that pool, mm-hmm, and you're sending them to, and you're sending them there, whether they have the right address or no longer live there, if you say, okay, we sent out 200, and you sent out three actually went to minority homes. And because when you say they're not filling them out, who's not filling them out?
We don't know.
So just for example, if you, I mean, you already got a small number of minorities. So just set for example, if you three went to the community and they were minorities, they may no longer stay here, or they may no longer now they may no longer live here, or they may no longer live at that address.
Mm-hmm.
They may no longer even live in Champaign. Abandoned anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there is going to knock those three, those two, or those three. Then one you may have that may get it and fill it out, and two you just lost because of that.
Well, we do have some safeguards, and I think you, there's a point there about people moving around that might be an issue, but we do have a couple of safeguards built in. One is, of course, is if they have left a forwarding address before it even gets to us, it'll get forwarded by the mail service. Okay? The other thing is, if they filed a change of address form with the post office, the database that we, this wheel that we get, we pay extra money so that that wheel, that data, goes through the change of address system. And it picks out those people that have had their address changed and changes it in our system so we know that they've had a new address change. Okay. Now, obviously, in order to serve on jury duty, you have to be 18, but you have to be a resident of Champaign County.
Hold on just for a second, because I want to bring some framework or context to this, because I think Roger is getting the, feeling the weight of the computer questions, right? You know what I'm saying? And
we are feeling
it. We are.
Yeah.
And so I think we've established from an educational standpoint that there's a lot of work that has to go on with educating the public, especially the groups of people who are sort of reluctant to be involved about state IDs, changing your address forms, returning questionnaires, right? So if we can just for a moment entertain the ideas and the changes around. When I think of the NBA lottery, the worst team gets the most balls put into the pool because it increases the likelihood of them being randomly chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So by decreasing the number of people who have already been chosen,
mm-hmm.
right, it increases the likelihood of the people who have less balls already of getting chosen. So if we're saying that in a year it turns over, if we move that to 3 years, then those people who have the fewest amount of balls each year, the likelihood of them being called is increased that much more. So that's what the question is being asked.
So pulling, if you've served, you keep you out for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That reduces the, you know.
Right. That's what the idea is. So with that and with all the other things that we're doing, we're saying that increases the likelihood of minority participation in juries. I have to go. You all, Patricia said she would close this out.
I have to go pretty soon.
Okay.
Well,
so
I was hoping we could
We'll close together. Okay.
One more question, I think. You know what would be, and I don't know if we can do this, but what would be good if we could see how, if for the questionnaires, if we can actually evaluate or see who, what population or who's not filling out these questionnaires for, but have to do it in an anonymous way, you know, whereas anonymous, if you said, okay, we sent out 300 and so many Caucasians, so many, you know, so many black, and then that way that'll, you know, that, you know, it will give a idea of what's going on. But that would be if we could do that. You know, I think that's a little bit more.
Yeah, we don't have race when we send out the questionnaires. We don't know the race. We know it theoretically when they come back because we have that question on there now. So we can't tell from that directly who's not sending it back. The closest we can do is estimated by which neighborhoods they're going to, because we know the demographics of the neighborhoods.
Right.
So that was what I was trying to do with the mapping. And at, for that year, the data wasn't quite good enough to estimate that. We'll be able to do it better when we have the new census data, and we'll be able to do it better when we have the 2009 data.
And we'll be more than happy to cooperate and get you access to whatever you need.
Okay. Judge.
Well, getting back to what Mr. Thompson said at the very beginning, and again, this is just the observation, I see very few young people. Now, I see them peripherally in the system, basically young women, 19, 20, 21, 22, who have children. And it doesn't make any difference what their race is. I don't see those people coming into court on being selected because they can't be. They're not getting questionnaires. They're just not filling them out.
Well, that's because they take care of the kids. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Actually right. They ignore it.
Or they're getting excused. So you're saying
young it's all women? About the education.
Well, it's young. 18 to 25, you don't see, period.
Well, I don't see many of them, but I see no young females in that age group that basically single moms. They don't exist in our jury pool.
Well, sure. So they're just not, it's going to have to be about the education, really about the work that we do is going to really make a big difference in getting people to learn the importance of the returning the questionnaires. And if there's a way that our randomness of how we select our jurors, like if we have, okay, we need 300, let's just take the first 300 that the machine kicks out. And from that point on, I don't know if it's 1 through 100, but the next time you go in and we need 300 more, you don't start from that 1 to 300. You start from 300 to...
You're right.
600. Yeah, so just leave them out. Don't put them back in the rotation for 2 or 3 years until you... Because you got a lot to choose from. And so if there's any way that we can do that, I think that will help as well.
And well, I'm confused as to whether that's possible or not.
It sounds like it is possible.
If we can't pull them off of the Secretary of State's wheel, but that's updated every year, every 6 months. But if we can figure out a way through our system to, once you've served, you don't have to come back for another. If you get a questionnaire again, or if you get a summons again, you don't have to come back.
Right.
You have an automatic.
And how do you
excuse.
Keep them out from going naturally back in the wheel? If you can keep them out, then it seems to me that you can move forward without.
We'll have to talk to Kirk about that.
What are some?
How do you keep them out? Whether they get excused or whether they say I just can't do it. How do you keep them out from getting back into the system?
Well, I definitely have to go, but Ms. Avery. What you have there?
Well, I thought we should just move on to getting into a little bit of the discussion about the PSAs.
Okay.
I think that we have fully discussed, unless somebody has just a pointed question about the randomness selection of the selection process. I think we pretty much fit.
But he's going to look into the idea of retiring for 3 years before
right.
have served.
Right.
So I think that would help.
And we have to revisit that.
And I think what Roger made a very good observation. He thinks that it's really in getting those to get them into the system, we have to get the questionnaire back. So that's some work we have to do.
So the other thing was just for the Political Action Committee, if you all could set up a meeting with, I guess it would be Naomi and Mike.
Could I have an opportunity to see if I can get some legislation, some proposed legislation drafted that you can then have something to take to Frericks, Jacobson, and Chapin Rose.
And you're also going to contact your. You said you were going to contact. You had some.
I'm not going to draft the legislation.
You have someone else. That
well, the Legislative Reference Bureau.
Okay.
If requested by a legislator, will draft the legislation, proposed legislation. So I'll try to get that done. Although this is not a good time for them right now.
Yeah, depending on
they have a little.
You know, that's why I was thinking about: is it a hot piece for them? Is it something that would make them feel like they're going to lose something? I mean,
not for them.
No.
No, I didn't think this sort of issue like yeah. that would be something that would
but
swing
it,
a vote.
But it could interject a substantial amount of money into our ability to pay jurors.
Yeah, definitely. So I have to.
Okay.
Have
all right.
To.
Well, we're going to be wrapping it up
okay.
here.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. 8 years, y'all.
Congratulations.
And so,
yeah, be careful.
Tyus left all of that information.
And did he leave the key power?
We
locked the
door
behind
locked.
Us. Yes, now, what are we supposed to do with the equipment?
Right there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Right. Have a good
see
weekend.
You.
Right.
See you, Aaron.
Yep.
Okay, so let's just move right into number 8, talking about our PSAs, and I know there's been a lot of discussion that's been going on via the emails, so why don't we just jump right into it. Patrick, I'm going to let you go ahead and start first because you were assigned to work with some outside groups about trying to come up with the PSA.
And that's, well, I know that was something that you had suggested, mm-hmm. and that was something about forming a subcommittee
mm-hmm.
about trying to with public service announcements.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I was really more when you made that suggestion as a suggestion, and how is that going to be looking, you know. And who's going to be in charge of that? And who is going to spend that time trying to pull that together?
Right.
You know, that was something that was a concern to me about, okay, well, who was going to actually do it? Because I knew that I wasn't going to have the time
okay.
to sit and try to coordinate that. Although I know Dr. P and I know he's good, mm-hmm. but I know once, hey, you know, we're talking about trying to pull in some other people and get them up to speed and talk to them about how is a public service announcement bringing someone else in without him really being here or really internalizing or seeing what we are trying to do and adding his input. So that was something that when you said it, and as I thought a little bit more about, well, who was going to actually be in charge of that? So I don't know if you was thinking that I was going to
yes.
be the one to actually do this subcommittee
yes.
and handle that media relation. Well, I apologize for that because I didn't. I was more thinking, okay, well, the first public service announcement, let's just get something, you know, written up or something written up to start with, because I know we had talked about several public service announcements. Now, I'm not against anybody or if that's something that wants to be a subcommittee, media relations, that's something that wants to be developed, and that's fine, but who's going to handle that, you know, and who's going to, you know, put that effort in to do that. That's the key.
Okay. Well, I guess at the time that I had asked you to be in charge of it, I was actually hoping that you, as a member of this committee,
right.
would create a little subcommittee,
right.
and we gave you some suggestions on who might be good to serve on that committee. That wouldn't take a whole lot to bring them up to speed as to what we're doing, because Kim Cranett works very closely with Dr. P, and she had already written, written a grant for us. So she had some ideas. Just based on what she had written, he would have gotten some idea of kind of what we're trying to do here. So he was just one suggestion.
And I understand what you're saying, but I was, you know, still the part that I was really could not commit to was trying to organize
okay.
and put
well,
that
I didn't get that day,
yeah,
so I apologize.
Yeah, I was only saying, okay, you know, the public service announcement
okay.
and me creating a public service announcement, and that we were going to be looking at several public service
right.
announcements.
Okay.
So that was the only thing that I had that I thought I was signing on to. I know you suggested that. And I was like, you know, as I was left and started thinking about it, I said, well, hey, that's going to require, you know, doing some extra.
Okay.
And I'm already, my schedule is
pretty tight. Okay,
very,
well,
tight.
So here we are.
Yes.
You, that didn't happen. So the committee, everybody has seen the emails that have gone back and forth. So
I mean, if you want to, I mean, if you'd like to see a subcommittee and that done, then don't let me be the one to, you know.
I think that's why we want to talk about it. I don't. This is something that we're all excited about doing, and so I want it to be a decision that the committee is making. We all seen your work, and I don't see why we can't work around what you've done. But that has to be, you know, the committee. When you're talking about doing PSAs, there is an art to it, and a certain amount of text or copy has to go in a, you know, a small amount of time. And so in all of our PSAs, whether you write one, I write one, Mr. Brown writes one, Barbara or the judge writes one, I think we have to have some consistency even in our message.
Sure.
So that whenever someone hears
mm-hmm.
our message, they know it's coming from us. Even though the text might be slightly different, the tagline is the same. So how do we attach the tag? That's why I kind of wish we had somebody who is works in media that does jingles or does PSAs to help us create kind of that format. So your text can move around, but your message, that one message, you only have a few seconds. People's attention spans in a short period of time. You don't have a lot of time for them to hear what you are trying to relay. So we have to come up with really a tagline that's really going to say whatever we want to say through in all of our different PSAs.
Right.
And so it doesn't have to be. But here's what I have a suggestion to do. Maybe we can take it out of our committee altogether. I think that we are talking about how we don't reach young people, that the young people are not in the selection process. We don't see them in the courtrooms. For some odd reason, they might just be having trouble. It's not that important to them, even though it is a very important civic duty.
Right.
But so here we have young people in the community that have peer courts, peer juries. They do this stuff. We have young people that are actually being involved. Regional Planning has peer court. We've worked with the Central High School. They have peer juries. These are young people. They have creative minds.
Right.
What about we assign these? That would give them a different arm of what they are currently doing with their work. Besides hearing cases of their own jurors, of their own peers, why not from our committee, why don't we ask those groups to what would it look like if they had to do a PSA for a jury of their peers? I mean, they're young. We want it to be young. We want it to be fresh. Why? What would you all think about if we can invite those kids? You will be very surprised. I've traveled to different peer courts around the state and sit in on those courts. Those young people will absolutely blow your way. And they have to come up with what the defendant has to come up with, when they have to come up with whatever their sanctions are, it's impressive what they come up with. So why don't we think about doing something like that? That would take the pressure off of us for trying to come up with the copy. It might be interesting to see what the young people will come up with. What do you think, Josh?
Well, I think that's a good idea. The first draft that you did, that you sent out, Mr. Thompson, I thought was an excellent draft. Is there any reason why we can't at least put one PSA out, at least to get it started, and then generate more from these,
from those,
like you were describing? Mm-hmm. But I think if we wait until we get them all put together and bundled, we're it
yeah, it'll take too long.
But I that first one you did, I thought
that's a good idea.
I thought that was an excellent one. And would you be able to do the voice?
The one that I put together, that's the one that, and now there was some, Jenny added some additional comments that I thought needed to go in there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, need to go in there. But the only thing, when I was thinking more about it, you know, and it is an art, mm-hmm. You know, and just my experience with the videotaping and editing, you have, you know, it is something that you have to be comfortable with saying so that
right.
when it comes out naturally.
That's true.
And people, you know, it's not something that you struggle with because
right.
there may be some, you know, some, you know, the one that, so that's something that has to be done so that whoever's doing it is very comfortable and it's coming out in a relaxing way. So, yes, I can do that.
Patrick, do you have it with you? You could just read it to us.
The one that I know that.
Remember, you emailed it
right,
to
I
us.
Had, mm-hmm. Now, there were some things that was added into it that I thought should. Keep all this together. Now, just to touch on my real concern about young folks, this is my real concern about young people, and the ones that I frequently deal with, and the ones that I want them to start being more responsible and being more involved is how you. Making sure that you are making them understand the seriousness and the responsibility and what's needed. It's just like when you come to church,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a level of expectation about how you are supposed to act in church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want these young folks coming to the courthouse playing because that's, we know that's not going to be tolerated and not taking it serious, horse playing in the jury pool. You know, because I know young men that have that you know, they're young and say, well, I'm here to just get my friends and my buddies, you know, because I can reflect back at a time where I was, my thought process was like that. So I know nothing ain't changed.
They won't make it into the pool, most likely.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, if they do, you know, we're trying to get these population of people
just to
more,
be more responsible.
And be more involved in understanding the importance of being passing judgment on someone.
Is that in? I think that some of your text was because I know that was something
that
you were strong.
That was the theme that I got from it.
Yeah,
was that
you were
directing this toward a specific group,
yeah, right.
and that it's incredibly important, incredibly
right.
serious.
Yeah. And so the hip hop part, I'm really. Because I know hip hop is, you know, I know this hip hop, that's a social thing. I listen to this is, you know, I'm from that generation, so I know how it can have an effect on not being responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So if these young folks, if they do it, if they do it in a way where it's being done, where the message that they're getting across to other young folks is that this is serious,
okay.
this is not. You know, and you are expected to come
dressed
appropriately. You know, put your pants up. You know, not coming. Coming. Respect. This is not. You know, you're not here to get your friends off.
I think you should meet some of these.
You know,
kids.
I mean, I'm just saying that's the message.
They take their jobs very seriously.
That's the
but,
message that you want to get across.
But that first one that he drafted, that Mr. Thompson drafted, I mean, that was you talking to
mm-hmm.
that group of people,
yeah.
and it and I thought it was powerful. I disagree with Jenny about wanting, you know, something flashy, something that'll catch their attention.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Thompson's voice for 25, 30 seconds on the radio, I think
with a message about how
with that kind of message, I think will be
I agree.
Would be powerful.
I agree.
No, I'd like to say to you, man, one thing you really can't worry about what effect it's going to have later on, but we do know one thing for sure, that the word needs to get out there.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, maybe the sooner you get it out there, and the more that is said, then it starts to absorb, mm-hmm. and folks absorb it. But you really can't try to anticipate, you know, 18 people, 25 people. The main thing is, man, is that, like Judge saying, what you said was a great message. Man, just get it out there. Just let's just get it out there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I was comfortable with that, you know, because that was something that, like I said, I was reflecting on my 41 years and, you know, and individuals and people and family. So that was a reflection of what I, you know, was trying to communicate to them to, you know, to take that this is very important and that they need to be involved. Of course, I don't want to be, you know, I think that I don't want to be responsible for doing all the public service.
No, absolutely not. But the,
yeah, I just, but know, this is coming from you.
Right. This, yeah, exactly. This,
yeah.
This one was yours.
Right. I think that, you know, the group, that would be fine.
Yeah.
But as long as they are getting the message that, hey.
We know, have to approve of the message.
Yeah. And so,
just give them an assignment.
Now, Jenny, it was 5 out of 7, right?
Yeah, so we're going to get it wrapped up here.
So Jenny did make a few edits and suggestions.
Okay.
So what I can do is I can take some of her stuff, put in there, and resend it out again.
Do you have it? Do you have it?
Yes.
Is that the original one?
This is the original one. Then that's the one.
Read the original one to them.
Yeah.
If you haven't
read
seen
it out loud now.
Yeah, please.
My name is Patrick D. Thompson. I'm a 41-year-old African-American male and a lifelong resident of Champaign County. I was selected as a member to sit on the jury committee to study ways to increase minority and African-American representation in the jury pool of Champaign County court system. Please understand that jury service is a very important matter, and as the African-Americans, we are constantly discussing our concerns how the legal system has failed the minority community. Well, I'm here today as a member of the jury committee to encourage you to be involved and help remove that concern. This is a public service announcement brought to you by the Champaign County Jury Committee.
What's wrong with that?
That's exactly right.
When he
emailed it to me, I think I emailed
you
back.
You said that
it's,
the first
it's great.
In the first minute.
Yeah.
So go with it.
And I know Jenny. Jenny likes to edit.
That's her job.
But I thought that
just
was
just how you said it, man. Just how you said it.
And we can
right
get
now
you into
it. Because the way you said it makes it sound serious. Mm-hmm. Now you're not just sitting there playing games. You were speaking in a serious tone.
So it was like 42 seconds that time. But you could probably leave off that last part about being brought to you by the
yeah jury. Yeah, that was the other thing. I wasn't timing it, but you're right. We
42
seconds.
So that
you got to cut
down
it down
to 30 seconds.
About 30 seconds. And of course, if you
might want to do some 60 second spots, but right now we want to just do 30 seconds.
Well, I don't
think it's cheaper to do 30 seconds than 60 second spots.
But if you practice it and you drop that tagline, you can probably get it down to 30 seconds.
The last sentence.
Yeah.
Because you already said you were a part of them.
Yeah, when you practice it, you can do it a little bit faster.
Right. Yeah, you should do radio commercials.
So
you don't think that we should tag it, this is a public service announcement? Of
that would be a normal, I think the station, I think, don't they tag it that this is public service announcement?
No, the station does that.
Okay.
Because he says at the very beginning.
He does say.
Who,
he does say
yeah,
that he's a part of this community.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So you can save some time there. But that was good.
So,
yeah, you did great.
So do you guys want me to incorporate any of what?
We like what you just said.
Don't worry about it.
What is it? Jenny's not here, but whatever.
No. Yeah, so she's not here. We can.
Because it has to be in your own words. And
right
what you have said, right, it has to be something that you can say very
right
smoothly. And if it's in your own words, I mean, if you start putting other people's words in there,
I agree. I thought that came from the heart, and you meant it, and it was obvious.
So now, we want to, you know, if you go to, you can go to WBCP, and they'll actually put you in the control room, or WDWS for quality, they'll do it there, and we can take the tape out and play it anywhere we want to. So I would suggest we do it in their control room.
Which
WDWS.
WDWS.
As long as we
down there in South Neil Street.
Yeah, it's on, almost like Neil and Windsor.
Who would set that up? Who would? Should our chairman make that call?
He can do it, or I can do it. You know, I'd work with him to do it.
That's
I've done some of that stuff.
Jim Tarpin News.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And if we can get Ted Stefanis and our chairman on the radio, Ed Penny, for your thoughts, that'll be great.
And, you know, lead in with our commercial.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Or at least let them know that these commercials are going to be coming. And you know, I mean,
but it would be kind of nice to just kind of lead in and play it at least maybe once or twice during the time that they're on here.
Jepson Friedman's on here. They can just play it as, this is one of the things we're doing.
Right.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, so Patrick, you're on.
All right.
Good job.
We're right behind you.
But I still think to get young people.
I agree with that too. But that was good. That was to the point, and
And I'll talk to the jury, the peer jurors.
I think that's a good idea.
Oh yeah, that, absolutely.
Start them getting young, getting them. Okay, so
what are your thoughts on Fridays too?
Big one.
Your thoughts on Friday, or is it just Monday through Thursday? Or
I think it's every day of the week.
It's every day of the week.
But on Mondays they used to do just a sports.
No,
show.
It's not every day. Penny, for your thoughts?
I thought it was every day.
Well, no, because they might have cut it back.
Monday. It's every day, but on Mondays they do sports.
Sports?
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
I knew
Monday they
don't do.
But doesn't Aaron work 4 days a week? Or maybe he works five now that he's in the days, because at night he worked four.
We can do it when he gets. I mean, it's important that he's the chairman,
yeah.
And he said we can do it after.
Well,
after
who knows how long in advance that they have the program
set to
line.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would be good for him and Judge to do it. That would be a good show. So our next meeting date is May blank 2012.
We were trying to set it up.
Jenny says in her email that she can't meet in May except for the 28th. I'm unable to attend CSCJS meetings in any Friday in May except May 28th.
I am able to. Not able to.
Oh, I'm able to.
All right. So,
sorry.
How about May 28th, guys?
No, it's the other way around. That's the one she can't.
Oh, cannot.
May 21.
Okay.
Right. May 21 would be better.
So
for
the back it up to May 21st.
Yeah.
How about May 21?
Yeah, that's better.
That
28 is better. Is closer to Memorial Day.
Memorial Day.
Memorial
so
Day
that's
weekend.
True.
Yeah.
No,
right.
I will probably
is, yeah.
not. May 21st is our next day. Motion to adjourn.
Move.
Second.
Okay. So that was Roger and seconded it by Patrick. How's that?
Yeah, perfect. We need to vote on that?
No.
All those in favor. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
I don't mind, I put you on the spot.
That was.